The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening, everyone. And so, the other little announcement is that, for those of you who don't know, we've changed the schedule for the rest of the evening a little bit, in that I will give a shorter talk than usual. And so I'll talk for about, I suppose, for about 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And then we'll take a little break for those of you who want to go home. And then some of you might want to stay, because then from about 8:45 to 9:15, we're going to have a little bit of a community meeting where I'm going to talk a little bit about IMC is contracted to buy a retreat center, or buy a property that we're going to turn into a retreat center, so we can, we'll stay here, we're not going anywhere, but we'll have an additional place where we can do residential retreats. And so many people are interested. We're interested in letting people know who are interested in what we're doing. It's a big step for our community. So we'll have a little bit of a community meeting to discuss that and present it for half an hour. So that's what we're planning here today. So since we are, I'm going to talk about this retreat center, I thought I would talk about retreat centers. And it's a Dharma talk as well. In the last few years, in my mind, I've been thinking about retreat centers as sanctuaries. And a sanctuary is a place that has a number of associations. I suppose it's associated with something that's sacred, a place that's sacred. But I also think of it as a place that's safe. Like if you go for sanctuary, sometimes you went to sanctuary in the church, and then your enemies couldn't get you as long as you were inside. You know, even the state couldn't get you once you were safe and inside the church. It's a sanctuary. It's a place of refuge. And it's also, the word refuge and sanctuary are sometimes are used seemingly synonymous in the world of nature preservation. There's a, you know, wilderness sanctuaries, there's wilderness refuges, bird sanctuaries, bird refuges. I think they mean, in my mind, almost the same thing. So a place of safety where we want to, especially in nature, we want to preserve something which is considered a treasure, something, you know, natural treasure, something very special, something perhaps that is endangered. And so when things are endangered, you want to protect it, and you want to create a place that's safe, that's sacred, that honors, respects something that is considered very important. And so in our tradition, we call it, we have the word retreat center, or the phrase retreat center. Traditionally, in Buddhism, they have the term vihara, which meant a dwelling place, a place where, and usually refers to where monks and nuns live. Sometimes we use the word monastery, but it tends to be associated with monks and nuns. And here in the modern West, our tradition has a number of retreat centers that are, sometimes monks and nuns will come and practice there or teach there, but it's mostly meant for people who are not monks and nuns, so-called lay people. And so we don't use the word monastery. We tend not to use the word temple, because a temple, I don't know what it exactly implies, but a temple implies more of a place where congregation comes to visit, like for their Sabbath or for their Sunday morning or something. So sometimes, you know, I think IMC here is more functioning as a Buddhist temple and the monastery, or more as a temple than as a retreat center. But we tend not to use the word temple because a few of us kind of don't like religion that much. You know, at least, you know, the history of, you know, whatever. You don't have to go into that part. So it's kind of strange that I'm in this occupation. So here I am. And so, so, you know, words like temple and a little bit kind of too religious. So we say this, you know, kind of neutral term, retreat center. But lately in my mind, the idea of sanctuary I like a lot. And I think that just as you would have a nature sanctuary that preserves something special, you have mind sanctuaries or heart sanctuaries. that provide a special place where something that is very hard, something that's endangered, something that's easily covered over or lost in the frenzy of everyday life, has a chance to flower and grow and be preserved. And I think that the good hearts, people's good hearts, spiritual hearts, awakened hearts, free hearts, hearts of compassion, are a phenomenally beautiful natural event that deserve national recognition. And just like John Muir got started the National Park Service, I think that Obama should start the national, what would be equivalent, National Mind Service. And we would create these special places in our country that would be places for the heart or the mind to go. And I suppose that's what churches and temples and things like that are for anyway. I mean, we have lots of them in this country. But retreat centers are quite special, I believe, because they're really meant to be a place that are quite distinct from how life is normally lived. And so it's a chance to step out of the normal flow of everyday life. Now, some people protest and say, what's wrong with daily life? And those Buddhists, you know, they always have this duality between this world and some other world, and they read, you know, and there is a kind of duality or distinction made in Buddhism between what's sometimes called the worldly life and sometimes it's called more the spiritual life or the liberated life or the higher life. And some people are uncomfortable with that duality, that distinction, because it's very easy then to kind of denigrate ordinary worldly life. However, if we look at the so-called ordinary worldly life, some of it is not so ideal. Some of it's quite painful and difficult for people. Spirit Rock, some years ago, received a letter from someone who had been at Spirit Rock is a retreat center where I teach up in Marin County. And we received a letter from a woman who had been on retreat some months earlier. And she expressed her gratitude for coming on retreat. And she said that it was the first time in her life where she felt safe in a place. That somehow in her life, maybe growing up in her family, in her communities, that she had no safety. And not only was she so safe, she was kind of impressed that even that she, not only did she feel safe there, but she felt safe enough not to lock her door. Because the doors of Spirit Rock are not locked. So people sleep in these residential halls, they're unlocked, really. And people feel safe. People walk in the mountains, the hills there, and feel safe walking in the hills. Not all people feel safe, even walking in nature. Some places are dangerous for people. And I thought it was quite remarkable that someone, that Spirit Rock could offer this service to a person who had grown up and lived a life of feeling not safe and offer a place of safety. So that distinction I'm quite happy to make, going from a place of lack of safety to safety. And a tremendous amount of people in our society live unsafely. They don't feel safe to go out into the neighborhoods after dark or in different situations. And then it's very hard for some people to step out of the habits of their mind, the strong conditioning of the mind. And there are people who are always, for example, busy and doing and doing and doing, and maybe trying to survive, trying to get along, trying to take care of a family. And in the busyness and the activity of surviving and making do, it's very hard to check in with oneself, to know what one feels, to process one's feelings. There are people who have had really terrible tragedies happen to them, and great loss and grief, and there's no, in the ordinary life, surviving and working and just getting by without. There's no place to go or no time for them to really process and feel and respect their feelings. And so it gets bottled up. It can be bottled up for years. And so a sanctuary is a place where people can step out of the flow of normal, ordinary life and not have to work, not have to do, not have to, and find out what's in the heart, find out what's going on. And in a sense, let our life catch up to us. Let us catch up to our life. And it's quite profound for some people. I've known people who have come to retreats because you know, of some dramatic death that they had to cope with. The last retreat I taught, there were two women there whose husbands had committed suicide in the last year. And so this was a sanctuary. I mean, where do you go in a situation like that? Where do you go to be received and nurtured and supported and where it's safe to cry and feel and not be kind of feel like you have to kind of pretend or avoid or something? And I can tell you, you know, as a teacher, I hear these stories and you know, these events and people come to, you know, and it's, I feel so grateful that we have such places where people in great need can come and be held and received and be witnessed and feel like they can kind of open up, where they feel safe enough, where they feel they can lower their guard. Some people have really strong conditioning. For example, addictions. There was one person at the last retreat who was struggling with television addiction. And bright young man, very promising, you know, in college and all kinds of wonderful things opening up for him. But if for some reason, he could not stop being on television. And he would be working on his work. Next thing he knew, he'd spent 6 hours. It was 4 o'clock in the morning, and he was watching television. And he realized he had a problem. Where do you go when you have an addiction? You go to places where one of the places you'd go is you go some places where you're not tempted. And so retreat centers are places where many of the usual sources of addiction are not available. There's no alcohol, there's no television, there's not supposed to be any drugs. So people, it's a fantastic sanctuary, very important for some people to have a place to go where they're not caught up in it. There are messages that come through our society about what's really important. And I think most of us know that some of the messages coming through the media and the advertisements and popular culture are not necessarily so wholesome, especially in the dosages which they want us to live by. So consumerism, shop until you drop. And so there's people feel like they have to have. I can see it in my young children. They get, this tremendous pressure from peers and from society and from everywhere to acquire and have the latest and the greatest. It's quite something to be a parent. And I don't know if it's always been this way, but it's quite something to, you know, to feel that, you know, I mean, I get pressure, from my son. I'm going to ruin his life if he doesn't get the. So there's all these messages of success and what it means to be successful, and some people buy into it. I remember once, many years ago, I met a man in Los Angeles, a therapist, who was an economic therapist, or something like that. And what his specialty was being a therapist for really wealthy people who didn't feel like they had enough money and were anxious and upset. I mean, these were people who had millions of dollars, who felt like they were really worried, they didn't have enough money, they couldn't survive. So he met them and, you know, was trying to help them through those difficulties. So this popular culture, the message of success, and some people buy into them in all the different ways. And it's really healthy for some people to see that there's an alternative and to step out of the popular mode or life as usual and step out of it and see that there can be other values, other ways of living, even if it's just temporary. Temporarily step aside so we can get a breather and look fresh and look deeply at what goes on. Some people, their life is so busy that they can't, it's really hard to be in discernment, to really look deeply and see, what do I really want to do with this life? What do I really want to do with some important decision? And so sometimes it's helpful to step out of life in a place that's quiet and peaceful, where you're really with yourself, so you can really see and what goes on. Another reason I like to call it a sanctuary is that the capacities, the potential that it resides in our mind and our heart, some of them are really beautiful. And some of the most, I think, I believe that that the most beautiful thing in the universe that I know, that I've encountered, is found in your own heart, in your own mind. I went to Asia to practice in 84, 85. And I was there for a few months, and I had a girlfriend, and so she came to join me there to practice with also. But before she came, I was in Nepal, in Kathmandu, waiting for a retreat with Upandita to start. And it was, you know, just a few days to wander around Kathmandu. And I saw this, and they had all these, like this Buddhist icon and tanka and painting, Buddhist kind of stores in Kathmandu, with windows. You walk by and you do window shopping. You see those Buddha statues and tankas and paintings and books and all this stuff. And so I was walking around Kathmandu, and there was one store I saw that had a Buddha statue, maybe about, I don't know, 10 inches tall, that really spoke to me, just like, you know, boom. That's, you know, it's like, wow, that's a powerful statue. That really resonates with me. And I don't know how much it was, maybe like $100, which was a lot of money for a person who had only 300. That's all I had, you know, my whole life. I mean, right at that point, I'd gone to Asia to practice for the duration. I mean, I had no plans of coming back. I was just there to practice wherever along it practice took, and on my $300. And so I had plane tickets to get back to Bangkok and different things, but I had. And so, that, you know, wow, it's $100. That's a third of my wealth. And what am I going to do about the statue? So I would walk back and forth, you know, walk around, and I'd go back and look at the window, and what should I do? And so then I got this message that my girlfriend, unexpectedly, it wasn't planned, was on a plane to meet me in Kathmandu to come practice. And I knew that she had less money than me. So I said, what do I do? And I decided that as beautiful and touching as the statue was, what was more touching, more beautiful, resides in the heart, in the mind. So I thought, I'll save that money, and I'll use it, since I have more money than her, I'll use it to help her so she can stay longer in practice too. I thought that was a nice story. Now that I look back at it. So, you know, there's a tremendous beauty. I believe, still to this day, the most beautiful thing that to be seen, to be gazed at, to experience, is found in one's own heart, in one's own mind, in one's inner life. And the experiences of great love and compassion, of purity, the experience of freedom and liberation, awakening, the peace, the experience of great insight and wisdom and understanding. Some of the most beautiful qualities that we cherish in people flow out of the heart, the mind, flow out of these beautiful qualities that can be developed and grown inside. And these qualities are not easy to develop to their full potential in a busy, harried, frenzied life, doing a lot of different things, lives where we feel afraid, life where we're bombarded and pulled into all kinds of popular culture and ideas, and you know, we're distracted from ourselves. We're so distracted we don't even know we're distracted. It's hard. And so it's really amazingly important, I feel, to have a place where that are sanctuaries. We go and we can really step out of life as it's usually lived and then see that life in fresh eyes and to see ourselves in new ways, to allow something new to happen and grow and develop within us. And then, if we do that, then we can come back to the world we left behind. And then we can drop the duality. First there's a mountain, then there's no mountain, and there's the mountain, as the Zen saying. That first you live the life, everyday life, then you leave it and drop all the concepts and all the ideas of ordinary life, special life, all the ideas of a sanctuary. Sanctuary is a place where you forget about sanctuaries. You drop even that distinction. And experience something very profound, a life of awakening that's not marred by concepts, ideas. But then you can go back to your ordinary worldly life and live it in a different way. Hopefully you live it without attachments and clinging and fear, greed and hate. You can come back and see it through different eyes and see with a certain kind of purity, certain kind of from different perspective, where we can engage in that so-called worldly life, but without greed, without hate, without fear. And if you can do that, if you can live without greed, hate, and fear, then there's no need for sanctuaries. Then there's no need for that duality or distinction between, you know, what would be a kind of a secular place, so-called, in a sanctuary, or ordinary life, worldly life in a sanctuary. But that distinction is very useful when we're suffering, when we're caught up and lost and struggling. Then it's useful to have a place to go. My hope is that when people who do practice, whether it's on retreat or not, discover these beautiful qualities in their heart, discover freedom, awakening, and then they can come back and offer that to the world. Or as in the Zen tradition says, come back to the marketplace with gift-bestowing hands. You know, not to stay at the retreat, but with hands that can offer support the world that we have. So I think it's I am a great champion for the National Retreat Center service that we should write our congresspeople to start. And there should be a retreat center in every county sponsored by our tax money. That's radical, right? Boy, oh boy. But I think that it would be extremely cost-effective. I think our need for a lot of public services would drop dramatically if more people in our society could touch into the beauty and of their own hearts and these great values that come along. So I'm very excited that it looks like IMC might have a chance to create a retreat center, and it gives us a chance to do a lot of this and create a place for our society. And I think I'm hoping it'll be one of the great gifts that our generation give to the next generation and to the next generation after that, to establish a place where generation after generation people can come and touch into these beautiful qualities and practice in a deep way, and then come back and bring that back to our society. So those are my thoughts. I hope those are okay. And those of you who would like to go home, which is a quite reasonable thing to want to do, why don't we take a 2 or 3 minute break. Those of you who want to stand and stretch if you wish, and then if you want to stay for the rest, please stay, and I'll talk in detail what we're about to do.